It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
You know, I gotta wonder what kind of working relationship you'd have with Satan.
It's Mike Shope.
I've often wondered that. Like, he, they, I don't know what his pronouns are, or their pronouns. Anyway, Satan.
And the Bulldog.
Maybe, what's the upside of doing well?
Well, maybe they're too busy making everyone else's life hell.
Oh, boy.
And you might just be able to do your own thing if you're partnered with Satan.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They're too busy, you know, making Scott Norwood miss field goals.
Oh, come on.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Guy misses one kick. I'm not going to say that I can't breathe right now, because that would be an overstatement.
Mm-hmm.
But they're taking Brock Bowers from us for week one and maybe longer. Because he had a knee injury last week. I don't know. I don't know. Thank God Evan is here. Because Evan will know. Evan Silva established the run. You know, you think, Evan, maybe this doesn't necessarily speak for you. You think you did enough work. To quote work, to get you to tonight. I mean, I was just telling Bulldog, like, my wife and kids are out of the house on Wednesdays. Perfect. Because this morning I'm just, you know, all the lineups and everything. And then 5 minutes ago, no Brock Bowers for at least a game. So we go right back to the drawing board, so to speak. It's never dull, is it?
No, it's absolutely devastating for somebody who had Brock Bowers. You know, Brock Bowers was set up to absolutely obliterate, I mean, the NFL record books this season from an on-paper standpoint. Quarterback upgrade, huge offensive system upgrade, such little target competition. We know, even last year when he was banged up almost all season, he was still fourth among tight ends in fantasy points per game, and now we're not going to have him. I know that the reports say, what, a game or two? We'll see, man. You guys know about the PCL injuries, especially with your own tight end, Dalton Kincaid. Yeah. I mean, right. I feel like that has ripped away a year and a half of his career. We saw it rip away a couple of years from Kyle Pitts, Ricky Pearsall, you know, Rashad Perryman. I think it contributed to his downfall in Baltimore. It's just, it can be really a really, really bad injury that doesn't just linger for one season, but lingers for multiple seasons. And it's almost like, God, I should have known.
I'm not even sure what to say. Like, hopefully it's not all that, right? But what's interesting to me, and it's just been a few minutes here since we started talking that this came down, but that the injury was last week, and this is one of those, Evan, where, like, okay, well, couldn't we have known that he hurt his knee last week? And, you know, did they need to wait a week? Maybe they did for swelling or something. I'm not a doctor, obviously. But, back to it. We'll see. Don't have to fix this by tonight.
The good news is, if there's any silver lining, is that Michael Mayer was not drafted in a lot of leagues. And there's a decent chance that if you drafted Brock Bowers, you have a ready-made replacement for him potentially on the waiver wire. Michael Mayer was a record-setting tight end at Notre Dame, a second-round pick in the draft. You should be able to pick him up if you drafted Brock Bowers, and he'll be a good start until Bowers comes back.
Was he a Mackey Award winner? It's your team.
He was. Michael Mayer finished second in the Mackey Award voting behind Brock Bowers in 2023.
Well, at least you weren't forced to swear here, which would have been bad for us had you done that. All right, Evan. Well, apart from this little bombshell today, I mean, most of the drafting season obviously is over. How do you think it went? How did it go for you personally?
In light of the recency bias caused by this and how high I had Brock Bowers ranked, I mean, I'm not feeling great right now, but we will have a little bit better idea in week one. I mean, these are real games. This is not, you know, teams out here playing vanilla throughout the preseason. We will see how depth charts are set to begin the season. I mean, this is very, very real. All this stuff that's about to happen, we'll get 60 to 70 snaps from each team. So I don't know. I mean, we're going to see about all that, Joe.
Yeah.
Well, How do you feel? You mentioned Kincaid here, and one of the things, obviously, we've been following this summer is, you know, the year began, Evan, and I'm sure you're aware of this, with Brandon Bean and Joe Brady both talking about, you know, load management through the spring and even into the summer, and what we've had is him never really showing up on a, you know, DNP list all through summer.
Right.
He's as healthy as maybe he's been since he was a rookie, and I don't even know how healthy he was as a rookie because he came in not having worked out at the combine or anything because of injury. So that might be, I don't know, how good a bet do you think Dalton Kincaid is right now?
I think he's a really good bet. And I've thought this for a few weeks. As you mentioned, he, knock on wood, stayed healthy seemingly every day throughout training camp. That's been the big thing for him. I don't think it's – some people are like, oh, it's because he can't block. And I don't think that he's like some sort of sensational blocker. Neither was Colston Loveland as a rookie last year. I think it's been because of the injuries. And as you mentioned, the load management. And now that he's sort of shown that maybe he is past that PCL stuff, he made it through training camp 100%. We have Joe Biscaglia out here saying he believes that Dalton Kincaid can advance to becoming a 60 to 65% player on offense after last year being a 38% player. I'm optimistic. I mean, I think that there are scenarios where, you know, there's been a lot of talk about DJ Moore, where Dalton Kincaid actually emerges as the Bills, you know, quote-unquote number one receiver this year, takes a really big leap. There have been so many tight ends throughout recent history that have taken a little while to get to where they need to be a true breakout. I mean, the list is unending. It's really rare for a tight end like Brock Bowers to jump in as a rookie or even as a second-year player and be dominant right off the jump. And so it would fall really in line with historical norms for Dalton Kincaid to take a few extra years and this to be his breakout. I actually think it's going to be.
That's McBride, for sure, who will now be tight end one, I would think, in whatever drafts are left.
How ready to talk about how impactful that could be for the Bills are you, Evan?
What, you mean a big step forward for Dalton Kincaid?
Correct.
I mean, to me, I think it's something that they need. You know, this defense, I don't know what their defense is going to be like this year because they still have, you know, so I think that they're gonna need to compensate for that, with, you know, if there's any kind of a transition to the new defensive coordinator, Jim Leonard, and, you know, still using a lot of McDermott's players. I don't know exactly how that's going to go, and I think that the Bills might need to score more points because of that, and to have, you know, a truly dynamic, like Dalton Kincaid led all tight ends in yards per route run last year, which is a great measure of efficiency. He was third in the NFL regardless of position in yards per route run. I think that they need that. I think that DJ Moore, based on the fact that one of the smartest offensive play callers in the league reduced DJ Moore's role last season and then traded him away in Ben Johnson, I don't know that he is capable of being a true number one. I think the Bills need Dalton Kincaid to be their number one. I think that he's got a good chance to, as long as he stays healthy.
Well, you've kind of answered any DJ Moore question here already, but, you know, what has it sounded like to you this summer with him? He's maybe obviously going to be somebody we ask everybody who comes on our show about. And he's always been kind of this polarizing guy, you know, like you want to like him, but it make excuses for who his quarterback is, yet there's always maybe a little bit left wanting. But it sounds like you're mostly out.
Yeah, I was just sort of on the fence.
Okay.
In terms of where I had him ranked in fantasy, I was maybe a little bit below his ADP. I drafted him a little bit, not that much. I mean, a little bit. I did like 70 drafts. I probably had him on like six teams. You know, so that's kind of where I was on DJ Moore. I just, you know, I think he's on the back nine of his career. You know, being a 29-year-old wide receiver, that's when the decline usually starts. And then what happened with him and Ben Johnson last year, and it's not because he's like a bad guy or anything. It's because I think that Ben Johnson didn't, you know, saw him as a declining player. I mean, I think he'll be okay. I don't think he's going to, you know, rip it up. I think that Dalton Kincaid is a player who could rip it up, again, if everything goes right health-wise.
While we're on the Bills, Evan, James Cook leads the league in rushing. Last year on the heels of 16 rushing touchdowns the year before, The touchdowns didn't dip too badly, still had 12. We're wondering if whether or not maybe there's an uptick in receiving for him, remembering that he was originally drafted as a receiving back and then just turned into this number one workhorse type guy. Ty Johnson is one of the Bills who is not practicing today. He's been their third down back, so maybe even this week in week one, there's more on Cook's plate. What are you doing with him?
I mean, I love James Cook. And actually, if you look at the game last year that the Bills and the Texans played, you know, it was a bad one for the Bills offense, but James Cook was the one, you know, the one offensive bright spot. James Cook is freaking awesome. This offense is built to run. It has been built to run since Joe Brady became the offensive coordinator, you know. And so, yeah, I think that James Cook is great, a great fantasy pick. I think he's going to have a great season. And if there was one player I would bet on this week to have at least a decent game against the best defense in the league on the road, it would, you know, among the Bills' skill position players, it would be James Cook.
That's interesting, Evan. I mean, we've, of course, been focused on this game for months as it's the opener. And also the Bills have lost there like six times in a row in Houston. And they don't have a lot of that kind of streak working right now in their recent history. And Houston, by the way, has won all those games without scoring more than 23 points in any of them. So they're not all Josh Allen games, but you're pointing your finger at Cook. And, you know, last year is a good example. 17 for 116 and a touchdown, as I look at it, in that game against Houston. Quite a matchup for week one for them, for the Bills. With all the winning they've done, it might be the toughest matchup possible, I think, for them going to Houston.
Dude, Chope, I just turned in my write-up for the game, and that's exactly what I wrote. Like, this could be the toughest matchup that the Bills face all season. I know that there has been some support among sharper bettors for the Texans to win the game straight up. I wound up picking the Texans to win, I think, 20 to 17 or something like that. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. You know, the Texans have an incredible defense, a defense that got better since last season, and they were right there with the Seahawks in terms of being the best defense in the league last year. So it's going to be a tough one. I think the Bills will have to grind out and win a close game. The Texans are going to want to play a close game, give the ball to David Montgomery relentlessly. You know, that has been one of the Bills' biggest weaknesses, the run defense. They're still light from the Sean McDermott era. And, I think that's what the Texans want to do. They're going to want to run the ball a ton with David Montgomery.
Does that, as we focus on these two teams together, the week one matchup, does that slow you down relative to, you know, the market, as they say, on Nico Collins? Or is this maybe a particular kind of game where you might think it's more about Montgomery?
I think that after the Texans lost Jaden Higgins to a torn ACL, you just kind of throw it out the window. And, like, Nico Collins could lead the NFL in target share, in air yard share. I mean, he's just going to get so much volume, and he's awesome. And, I mean, he's going to be a big problem. Those deep crossing routes that Nico Collins can run, that's going to be a big problem in the back end of the Bills' defense. Not that they don't have, you know, some pretty good personnel back there. I think Christian Benford could be a tough matchup for Nico Collins one-on-one. But he's going to be running those deep crossers, and he's really hard to defend on those. And then it's going to be Dalton Schultz underneath, I think. And that's going to be those guys are going to spearhead the Texans' passing offense.
Evan Silva, our guest, established the run. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. I'm sure Mike Leone is listening, taking notes on all these comments that Evan is making, your colleague at Established the Run. What do you think tonight? So, interesting, I think, that New England is only a 3-point underdog in Seattle, given how the Super Bowl looked, without Henderson, if that matters. Does that reflect maybe a general skepticism about the Seahawks losing Clint Kubiak? I mean, do you think that that's in the air with this game or this season ahead?
That's where I'd start, yeah. Also, year to year, you know, I think that the Seahawks are going to have a great defense again. But maintaining being, you know, a top two defense year over year, that's really more difficult than maintaining a top two offense year to year. That can be a very volatile thing to rely on, is defensive dominance year over year over year. And then, yeah, you add in the loss. Like, we don't know what the offense is necessarily going to look like under Brian Fleury. And we know that it surpassed so many expectations last year under Clint Kubiak. I don't know if you remember, but last offseason, people were like, oh, this offense is going to be terrible. The offensive line is going to be horrible. Sam Darnold can't deal with pressure. Right. You know, and it's differing now. The feeling is different now, but yeah, there's the offense could see a lot of regression this season. Also, it's not like they upgraded their pass catcher core very much. They only have one guy. They've got JSN. You know, maybe Rashid Shaheed can give them a little bit downfield, you know, after his in-season acquisition. But yeah, that's why I had JSN ranked a little bit lower than a lot of other people. I wound up with Amon-Ra St. Brown ahead of him. Just the bankability of the offense isn't there in Seattle.
On the New England side of tonight's game, the two big skill position adds are obvious. A.J. Brown and, of course, Romeo Doubs significantly behind that, but still maybe impactful. How about both of them and what they're going to do for New England?
Tonight, you know, it's always hard playing against, you know, Mike McDonald defense. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. You know, A.J. Brown is a player that a bunch of his rate stats were among his career lows last year in Philadelphia. I know he's dealing with a hamstring injury. He had some sort of a fallout with the team. He's another 29-year-old receiver. But all the reports on him were glowing throughout training camp. And so I'll be really interesting to see. It's going to be. I don't have any bold predictions. I'm ready to watch the game.
Right, but as far as the season goes as well, you know, New England. A lot of the talk, especially here in Buffalo, Evan, about them is they played such a soft schedule. Of course, the Bills played a pretty similar schedule last year, but that New England sort of got fat on that. The playoff path was pretty cakey. You know, they got C.J. Stroud in weather. They got Jarrett Stidham in weather and made it to the Super Bowl. So there's maybe a little bit of a paper tiger notion about them. Do you, I don't know, how do you feel about that?
The Patriots, if they're going to be, I mean, I think that the trajectory for Drake May is going to continue to go upward. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, in the Super Bowl, they had two of their rookie offensive linemen playing hurt, like clearly playing hurt. Those guys are healthy and now in their second seasons. They acquired A.J. Brown. You know, so I think that for as much regression as people might expect for the Patriots, based on all, they played the easiest schedule, whatever, like they also got better. Mm-hmm. So Mike Vrabel always churns out a good team. It doesn't matter what personnel Mike Vrabel has. Like he had the Titans under Ryan Tannehill as like the number one or two AFC seed one year. I mean, he's an awesome, awesome coach. Josh McDaniels is a great offensive coordinator. The Patriots are going to be really good.
Two more for me, Evan, on a couple of players that have been interesting storylines in fantasy, recognizing that almost everybody's draft, I mean, it should be over by now with, you know, there's a game tonight.
There is a game tonight, yeah.
But the Green Bay backfield, it's hard to know how to play it. Jacob's status is up in the air. His court date gets moved up to, I think, tomorrow. Like, what is there a strategy you've sort of relied on when it comes to the Packers, or has it just been too volatile to really trust anything?
You're just talking about the backfield or the offense in general?
You know, both, because their pass catching group is, you know, it's like chef's choice almost.
Yeah, well, you know, Matt LaFleur has been saying it consistently throughout the offseason. He reiterated again today that they are going to go with these three receivers because in recent years, like, they would play five receivers. They'd use a five-man receiver rotation on game days. And it was annoying to fantasy players because, you know, the starters would only be playing, like, 65% of the snaps, whereas, you know, guys on other teams are playing every single snap. And so that really limited the ceiling and lowered the floors for the players that were theoretically starters. Now they're going to go with Christian Watson, Matthew Golden, and Jaden Reed on almost every single snap. That's going to be really big for them, for those players' consistency in the box score. when we're talking about the running, it's going to be really touch and go with the running back situation. They're playing the Vikings in week one. Mm-hmm. So that's a really tough defense to play guys against. Chris Brooks is going to be used a lot because he's their pass protection back. He's not going to get the ball a lot, but they're going to need him because the Vikings blitz at one of the highest rates in the league. They're going to need their best pass protector, and I think they'll mix in Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lloyd is their most explosive guy with the ball in his hands, but they're just going to mix him in. So it's going to be really touch and go. You know, that's why nobody was using high draft picks on Packers players. Marshawn Lloyd wound up being like a 6th, 7th, 8th round, you know, sort of wild card lottery ticket. But it's going to be touch and go with a really tough matchup in week one.
And lastly, Evan, how about San Francisco? I had a team I was looking at today with Mike Evans and DeJuan Stribling. And, you know, you drafted Mike Evans, you start Mike Evans at this point if he's going to be healthy. But is Stribling interesting to you?
Absolutely. It's going to be another touch-and-go situation. Stribling actually went around the same areas in drafts that Marshawn Lloyd did. We want Stribling to get to a point where we know that he's going to be on the field a ton, that he's not losing snaps to a guy like DeMarcus Robinson or one of the younger sort of rotational receivers. I mean, DeJuan Stribling looked awesome in the preseason. That doesn't guarantee that in week one he's going to be out there, you know, enough to be relied on in fantasy. I think Mike Evans is a must start in week one. If you're going to use Mike Evans, you use him at the early in the season when he's healthy, you know, relatively. And he's an old player. You want to bet on those players early in the season because they don't always hold up over the course of a season.
Evan, I've had another great offseason listening to you all the time. I just really enjoy your work, and here's to a great season. Let's win big money. What do you think? Why not?
Let's do it, guys. Let's do it, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks, Evan. Evan Silva from Establish the Run. He is joining us from Chicago, perhaps even O'Hare, actually.
It could have been, yes. Right.
I've heard him say, and Ross Tucker does this, when he's doing a radio hit, he'll go for a walk. So he'll walk and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, great. You can hear it, though.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what he was doing. Maybe he was sailing at Lake Michigan or something. I don't know. Yeah. You know, we got there.
Yeah. Let's win money. That's why you do all this?
No, it's not. It should be. And it's. I'm not even kidding. It should be. It isn't.
Pride.
I mean, I'd love
to
win.
It's just for pride.
I'm still in fantasy football. I still think of myself as the gardener in an old movie called Being There with Peter O'Toole.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Where he is like, he's dimwitted. Is that a term you can say?
Sure. Yep.
But people find him to be really deep because he has like two-word answers for everything, but people are just, he goes, the show will never have sounded older than this. He goes on Dinah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He goes on Dinah.
Yep.
And he really has nothing to say, and people think he's just brilliant.
He's so quiet.
He's quiet.
A deep thinker.
He's my grandmother's line that she would say, the less you say, the more people think you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he really just doesn't know what to say.
Right.
And he goes miles. So that's what I don't know how I ended up in all this fantasy world.
I should really make an effort to see that movie because I would say my favorite Wilco album is named after that movie.
All right,
Being There is their second album as a band, so it's way back, like late 90s. And I've never seen the movie, but I've read numerous times that they named the record after the movie.
Yeah, because suddenly I started getting invited into like expert drafts, like oh this guy. What am I doing here?
Hmm.
But then you sort of learn it.
It's your and it's your status as an award-winning radio talk show host.
Oh, the awards! Yeah. I can't even hear you because they're plugged in my ears right now.
Yep.
All the trophies, all the Marconis. What have we won? Not really anything.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Couple things.
I needed to put award-winning in front of that.
It's only 26 years. I mean, it's got to be right around the corner. Those trophies, those awards, those honors, accolades.
They're holding them back until we get to 30.
Yeah, they want us to prove ourselves first. Sal Capaccio coming up at 5. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.